having done this last year, driving up and dropping my daughter off at Northeastern up in Boston, he's been through the ringer emotionally, I'm sure. So, Mitch, how are you right now? How's your state of mind?
Well, it's funny, Willie. If you would have asked me 2 hours ago, I'd say it's fine, no big deal. But then, like, I just texted Gabe. I was like, how's it going? He's like, oh, it's good. I'm at the gym working out. And then I was like, you know what? He's doing fine without me. Like, I'm sad. Like, I would much prefer that than him sitting in his dorm room crying, of course. But, like, dropped my daughter off at Zoe at Vanderbilt 3 years ago. She's a senior this year. And that was weird, but it was, like, it was right down the road. And, you know, I knew I'd probably see her more often, or I could see her if I needed to. So this was a lot different. And, I got to admit, William, a little sad today. So if there's no pep in my step here, you'll know why.
Yes. I'm telling you, I've been there. That when you're driving the car off,
yeah,
that's a tough moment, isn't it?
It's weird. I mean, it's like you're in a movie and you drop the final goodbye, and you know they've still got so many activities. Classes don't start till next week, so they're meeting with their advisors and social things. So they got plenty going on, and we had about a 7 hour car ride just sitting there, you know, listening to podcasts. So like, okay, what do we do now? So we'll figure something out.
All right. Yes, life will go on.
Yeah.
I noticed today, you know, with all of the talk surrounding Arch Manning and his decision to go to Texas, of course, that's still so far down the road. They actually named their starting quarterback today, Quinn Ewers, who is a redshirt freshman. So in theory, this kid could be around. He could be, you know, racked up a couple of decent seasons by the time Arch Manning gets to campus. So what do you know about Quinn Ewers?
Well, he is very high profile. He was the, and I'm sure you remember the story, Willie, but you know, he was the number one quarterback, number one recruit in the country in the class of 2022, had been committed to Texas, decommitted about a year and a half ago, and then signed with Ohio State and was going to be part of the class of 2022, so should be a freshman this year. And then for NIL reasons, he's from the Dallas area, for NIL reasons, because at the time, and I think it's still the case, you could not, in Texas, high school players could not profit from their name, image, and likeness. He enrolled at Ohio State early last year to take advantage of some NIL opportunities. So he was a true freshman in the 21 season. And as Ohio State fans will tell you, very famously had handed the ball off twice. That's like the extent of Quinn Ewers' career were two handoffs in the Michigan State blowout. So after the season, he transfers to Texas, you know, the favorite son coming home, new coach and all that. So most Texas fans were giddy and expected, no doubt about it, he's going to be the starting quarterback this fall as a redshirt freshman. But there had been some news leaking out that maybe Hudson Card, who was the week one starter last year, had a good camp and maybe he wasn't going to start. So Texas fans were flipping out, like, what is Steve Sarkisian doing? Quinn Ewers, who at one point had a perfect recruiting ranking of 1.0000, you know, how can we not start this guy? Well, so they just announced today that Quinn Ewers is going to start. And as you mentioned, it's an interesting predicament, dilemma, not dilemma, but, you know, Arch Manning will be a true freshman when Quinn Ewers will be a redshirt sophomore next year. So if things go as planned for Quinn Ewers as a former number one recruit, he has a good year this year, a great year next year. He goes to the NFL, Arch sits for 1 year, and then becomes the quarterback. Now, those perfect plans never really come to fruition, so maybe Arch is the week one starter next year. But on the roster next year, barring anything weird, Texas will have two number one overall recruits in the country out of a three-class period.
Pretty solid right there with that. Hey, Mitch, your thoughts on this? And I'm going
to
bring.
Hey,
back...
Willie. First of all, when you asked me to come on the radio, you did not tell me who your co-host was today. I feel like you were being a little dishonest and purposely withholding information. Now we're past the point of no return. So I guess I must continue.
Oh, Mitch, my man, how are you, buddy? I feel bad for today,
you,
man.
Good talking to you. Go ahead.
Well, let me ask you this, and I love – when Willie said you're going to come on, I was like, awesome, we can talk football. We're not going to spend, you know, 2 hours on conference realignment and NIL. We're just going to talk on-the-field stuff, so I was so excited. Let me get your thoughts on this. The game I'm looking forward to this year, and not because it's Tennessee, but, Mitch, that October 8th game at LSU, when Tennessee could go in that game unbeaten, facing an LSU team, if they beat Auburn the week before, could also be unbeaten. What an environment. That's, you know, if you're going to get Brian Kelly, get him now. You're bringing this high-powered Tennessee offense in the Baton Rouge. And the Tennessee players, I don't think have ever experience Baton Rouge at night. That game, Willie, I mean, Mitch, just stands out to me in so many ways how that could be a deciding factor for both teams in the season.
Yeah, well, first of all, Joe, it's always fun when these teams, like, that's, you know, one of the byproducts of the expanded SEC, you know, from when we first started watching it to 12 teams back in the day to now 14 teams, is you lose games like this. Not that Tennessee and LSU are big rivals, but, you know, historically two of the better programs in the SEC, and they don't play much. So, you know, if you're a Tennessee fan, whenever, you know, Tennessee plays LSU, especially down the air, it's an event. It just feels like games at LSU are an event. And you're right. These are two teams, you know, neither are really expected to win their respective divisions. Now, but both are talented teams. Probably the, you know, external expectations for LSU are probably a little better than Tennessee, but, you know, there's still a lot of unknowns there at LSU, especially at the quarterback position. So, yeah, I think if you're circling games to watch in the SEC this year, this is maybe a little bit under the radar, but will be a big barometer game for both teams. And, yeah, I mean, just this thing about Tennessee offense is, and I'm not saying SEC East teams will, like, catch up with it, but when you see an offense like this every year, you're more familiar with it. LSU can practice the speed with which Tennessee plays, but until they really see it, it's kind of hard to deal with. So, like, games like that, I'm always like, it's important for, you know, we're looking, trying to break down X's and O's in a game, you know, 2 months down the road, but I always feel like it's important for a team like Tennessee to score early because teams can catch up to your speed the way which you play, so you need to take advantage in a game early.
That's a great point. It's also like facing the triple option. You want to face it game one instead of game five because you haven't practiced against it all year long, and all of a sudden there it is, and you got to do that. But, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. That's unlike any other offense in the SEC is to watch Tennessee up and down the field so fast. And you know, Mitch, that you know what Kiffin did last year with Ole Miss in Knoxville with the guys falling down, you know that same thing's going to happen this year. And we're going to be talking about it again. How do you stop it? Does a guy go out for a whole series? I mean, it's going to be a chaos again as people try to stop this offense.
Yeah, I mean, they tried to legislate it, and I forgot what they some rule was enacted. I forgot what it was.
Yeah,
but
you know
right.
What, Mitch, I was going to ask you about that because I actually read that this morning. Rule changes for 2022, and I saw Steve Shaw and the explanation about – you know, basically faking the injury, right, to slow the game down. It's become a big thing, but how do you legislate it? And I read what they did, and I can't see what they did.
Yeah, so that's why it probably would have stuck in my mind if it was something more definitive. So I don't think anything in the short term, like, and you know, what Joe suggested makes sense. You know, if you come out, maybe you've got to stay out for the whole series.
Yeah, I think they said they considered all of this stuff, but then they decided – you know, we didn't want to encourage kids to stay on the field when they're actually hurt. But
yeah,
I mean, so I don't think they, I don't know what they really changed.
With today's climate, and, you know, we're just so much more sensitive about injuries, especially head injuries. Obviously, these probably aren't head injuries, but the last thing college football needs is for some kid not to fall down or not to do something because he doesn't want to leave the field first. Let's say it's first and 10 at the Tennessee's own 20. We're just using Tennessee as an example here. And a kid stays on the field, and he's really hurt because he doesn't want to miss the next six or seven plays, and it turns out he's got a concussion. And then, so I don't like it either, but I really don't know what the solution is to this. You know, the obvious ones when the camera's on a kid and you got guys on the sideline saying, go down, the kid falls down. That's one thing. But other than that, it's really hard to figure out when guys really are hurt.
Mitch Light is with us. And Mitch, along the lines of, you know, I want to ask you, did it seem like back in the day, before so many coaches, and now it's almost you're surprised when a coach does have open practices or, you know, the ability to watch maybe an entire scrimmage. It seemed like back in the day in August, you would have a lot more reports on who was doing well in the scrimmages, more storylines, and now I just don't see a whole lot of that. Is that fair to say that it's hard to really gauge a Texas A&M or an LSU or a Tennessee because we don't really get to watch? Back a generation ago, you would have a group of media that could actually watch the practices every day. Is that fair to say that it makes it harder to evaluate what we're going to see?
Sure. It's like the NFL. Back, you know, the NFL practices are open and, you know, it's just college coach. It's the nature of the sport, the nature of coaching in collegiate ranks. They're all paranoid and, you know, And they can get away with it because they each school makes its own rules. Like if the conference came in and said you need to have X amount of, you know, open scrimmages or open practices, then maybe they'd have to do that. But no one wants to do that. And yeah, I mean, it's, you know, God forbid you see, you know, who's taking the snap on first and 10, you know, at the beginning of a practice. And, you know, some coaches are, I think Mike Leach is pretty open. You know, some coaches don't care, but, you know, a lot of coaches do care, and if they don't have to open practices, they're not going to open practices. They don't want injury information leaking out. In fact, I think Hawaii, you know, I haven't paid that close attention, but, you know, with Timmy Chang's under coach, evidently Hawaii is just like, there's just no information coming out, like no idea. Like they could they could be running the triple option in week one, and they're be like, oh, shoot, you know, we thought Timmy Chang's the coach, they're going to throw the ball 70 times a game. So, you know, you can convince me that it helps maybe in a situation with a new coach and, you know, what's your scheme? Are you, you know, defense, are you preparing for a 3-4, 4-3, 4-2-5, whatever, I guess. But, you know, it seems a little bit much. These coaches are a little too paranoid.
All right, let me ask you this, Mitch. Cut off the joint practices with the Titans and the Buccaneers. I've asked college coaches this, and they all hate the idea, but I like it. Why not have in preseason or, you know, fall camp, have Austin Peay come down and do that joint practice with Vanderbilt, or have Tennessee Tech do it with MTSU? Do you like that? I mean, it's just for like 2 days to mix things up a little differently. College coaches I've talked to, Mitch, hate this idea. What do you think about that?
Yeah, let me ask you this, Joe, because you guys cover the NFL more than me, and I've never – do they tackle in those, or
no.
They just treat them like they don't? Okay, so –
for the most part, no.
The only thing I could think of was like college coaches don't want to, you know, tackle. They don't want injuries and stuff like that. They want to control the amount of times they've got those scrimmages and all that. So, yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. But, Joe, I think it just goes back to the paranoia. Like, I mean, let's say Austin Peay comes down and Austin Peay's wide receiver coach, you know, used to coach with Timmy Chang at Colorado State, and he tells Timmy Chang what Vanderbilt's doing. You know, I'm just making this up, of course.
Right.
But, like, I think that's the point. They just want to. They want to close it down as much as possible, and that makes sense. People always say, you know, you go into the college season with so many unknowns. Not that you learn a lot in preseason in college football, but, you know, I'd take it a step further, Joe. Rather than a joint practice, what about an exhibition game? Now, I can see why coaches would push back on that because of potential injuries, but, that, you know, I haven't heard much talk about it, but it seemed like years ago there was talk about colleges playing exhibition games, but I don't think we'll ever see that.
It'd be fun, though. It'd be different, and I know it's all about not about us, but, I mean, your guy can get hurt in practice going against the second-team DB. I just thought it'd be interesting to change things up and watch the competition-wise, but as you said, I mean, things get out, they get leaked, and the coaches I've talked to all like, not as long as I'm here, it'll never happen.
Yeah, I mean, again, and they've got – if someone is making them do it, like the league saying, okay, you're going to have open practices, then they'll do it. But that's not going to happen.
Mitch, great stuff. You were able to execute this very well the day after dropping off Gabe at college. So, you know, next week will be full throttle. When Zoe goes back to school, you'll be a full-time empty nester. So we'll have to look forward to that there.
It all ends, yes, as of Sunday afternoon, it's all over. Just me and Heather, nothing
okay.
else.
So hopefully your level of interview stays – at the good standard next week. So that'll be something to look for.
I'll do my best.
All right.